We're in mid-season form here on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. What you didn't hear off the air was a real stumper of a question from Al Melchior to me, Adam Azer, also Scott White on the podcast. Al, why don't you go ahead and repeat the question?
Okay, it seemingly very simple. I said, Adam, who's the Dodgers manager?
And I said, that guy with the hair and the skin and got a couple of elbows. I had no idea who it was. No idea. Totally blanked.
Yeah, no, it just occurred to me that it's going to be hard for me to remember that Dave Roberts is the Dodgers manager, at least for a few weeks, maybe.
We're never going to forget now. But anyway, an embarrassing moment for me to start the show. I didn't even have to share it, but I'm so open with everybody that I thought you'd get a kick out of it. And Scott...
I'm inspired.
Scott, did you know? Did you know the answer?
I know... Dave, like, now that I know the answer, I know the answer because I remember Dave Roberts being hired by the Dodgers. I don't know if I was presented the question out of the blue, how I would have done with it. Cause yeah, that's not something I've reflected on a whole lot.
We don't rank them. So,
right. Exactly.
We can go into the minors, but, the manager, forget it. Completely irrelevant to fantasy baseball. Welcome to the show. All right. Two per week for a few weeks. Then we'll ramp it up to three. And then four, and then five. And please stay with us for the whole season. We're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to help you win your league. And we're going to read your emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. It is January 26th, and I am officially sick and tired of your keeper questions, everybody.
Come on.
Took you a while this year.
Send us emails that everyone can benefit from. I think we're at that point now. We have a lot of listeners. We get a ton of emails every day, and most of them are keepers. And yeah, look, I'm going to read them. They're in the notes, but not until a little bit later. But I've reached that point where I just, give us something that we could talk about in depth and have a nice conversation and a good podcast from. Is that so much to ask, guys?
Are you saying this live, or was this rant pre-recorded? Because I've heard it before.
You heard it. Not this year, you didn't hear it.
No, but maybe you saved it and you're just sitting play and kicking back. And
no, this is the 2016 edition.
Okay.
I'm not recycling. Let me give you an example. Here's our email of the day from Ryan.
Well, it's the email. Is this a good email?
It's a good email, yes.
Non-keeper. Okay. All right.
Non-keeper. From Ryan in the loo. He says, hello, Deacon, Arthur, and Spence. And the clue, this was a CBS show, Deacon, Arthur, and Spence.
Those are Kevin James' friends on King of Queens, right?
Ah, that's right.
Well, I guess Arthur's not his friend, but his father-in-law.
Good job, Scott. I
know
too
much
that.
About the show.
That's a pretty bad show. Not a fan of that show at all. Not a fan. Okay, so here's the question. How much emphasis do you guys put on a player's lineup? For instance, would you rather have a Ryan Braun type who's in a really crappy lineup, or a Justin Upton type who's now in a very good lineup? Guys like Brett Laurie and Todd Frazier come to mind where their lineup is going to be better. What do you guys think?
I don't put a whole lot of emphasis, but it's a factor. But, I think of Giancarlo Stanton the last couple of years and people kind of poo-pooing his value a little bit because of being in the Marlins lineup, and he did just fine. And Freddie Freeman's another good example of that last year. So not too much weight.
Yeah. I think in this, the case of these two particular players, a really good year for Upton is kind of a normal year for Braun. So that's like they're not really quite in the same category for me. So there's no need to use that tiebreaker of supporting cast.
No, but don't you think that Upton, like I could see the case for Upton scoring a lot more runs, getting better pitches to hit.
Yeah.
I think the lineup really could help him. Maybe.
It could.
Yeah.
I mean, Ian Kinsler, I think the biggest reason he's, remains one of the highest scoring second basemen is because he bats at the top of the Tigers lineup and is, pretty much a lock for 95 runs as long as he stays healthy.
Right.
Which he's done a good job of that too recently. But really he's not near the player he was in Texas. So, the lineup's kind of saved him.
What an email from Ryan. I mean, that's how you do it. Ryan says, P.S., I have 8 keepers. Please help me pick 7. No, just kidding. Ryan wouldn't do that. He's not that kind of guy. Now, here are your news and notes. Oh, I don't even think I told you guys what we're doing on the show today. You know, but the listeners don't. It's sleepers time. Although you probably knew that from the title. So Scott now gave me a whole bunch of their sleepers, early sleepers. This is subject to change. I picked 6, I believe, from each of you. So we've got 12 names to give you. Put them on your radar. Get ready for draft season. But first, here's your daily dose of news and notes. The Mets signed Yoenis Cespedes, 3 years, $75 million, with an opt-out after the first year. Al, did you like Jerry Seinfeld's tweet about a Cespedes for the rest of us?
Yeah. No, that was great. That was, in fact, that was, I think the first thing I did after I saw the news was go to his Twitter feed to see his reaction. And he didn't disappoint me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did very well with his Festivus tweet. Now, here's
an interesting fact. A part two, though, because when they acquired him last year, I think he tweeted the same thing.
The same thing?
Well, not have been the exact same tweet.
He said a Cespedes for the rest. No, this year he said, I think he just said, yes, it is. And then he had the second tweet that referenced the Festivus episode.
All right.
I reached for Cespedes, but so did another team. As I rained money upon him, I realized there had to be another way, a 1-year opt-out. That's what he said, which is very specific to this situation. Now, here's a here's an interesting stat for Cespedes. This is what he hit at Citi Field. As we remember, he went to the Mets and played so well that he was getting like MVP consideration, not real, but you know, talked about, even though he'd barely been in the National League. But at Citi Field, he batted .224. It was really when he was on the road, he got super hot when he was with the Mets. So he only batted .224 in 27 regular season games at Citi Field. I'm going to guess that means nothing to you, but I'll bring it up anyway. Does it mean anything to you guys?
It's interesting. I mean, it's not, Citi Field's not like this scary pitcher's park anymore. It's pretty neutral. So I don't imagine that's a long-term concern. And, I think the anti-hype for Cespedes might be a little strong. Because obviously he wasn't the player he was the stretch he was with the Mets. I mean, if he was that player over a full season, he would have had the second most head-to-head points per game to Bryce Harper among outfielders. And he's obviously not that good. But you look at what he was doing with the Tigers before that, and it was, I won't say a career season because his rookie season was very strong too, but it was a big step in the right direction. And it wasn't just strictly batting average. His fly ball rate was down significantly. He was hitting more line drives. Judging by his batted ball trends, it looked like a guy who, after the success of his rookie season, started selling out for home runs and his batting average plummeted as a result. And last year he got away from that and the batting average went back up. So I could see him and expect him, assuming good health, of course, to be a top 15 outfielder this season.
Would you guys rather have Cespedes or Ryan Braun?
Cespedes.
I'll take Braun then.
Interesting. I'm interested.
Scott, in that lineup.
I'm surprised, Scott. I thought you would have said Braun. Why would you go Cespedes there?
Because Braun's recovering from a back surgery, and I think that's scarier than anything Cespedes is dealing with. The only reason. I mean, if Braun was completely healthy, I'd take Braun instead for he has the steals potential on top of everything else.
How about Cespedes or Justin Upton while we're on that subject?
Cespedes.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Okay. Carter Capps and AJ Ramos will compete for the Marlins closer job. I have a serious question because I have a terrible memory. I can never remember things. Did I kind of call that a few weeks ago?
I don't remember that. I know it was rumored about a few weeks ago, and I think we talked about it. So, sure.
Okay, cool. Thank you, Al.
And the loser has to help the guy on the ladder who's moving in the fences at Marlins Park.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty cool, too. But I don't know. I looked at Ramos's numbers, and the guy never gives up hits.
I don't know. Did anyone follow the joke Al was making?
I will find out.
Yeah. Why? No, they are moving the fences in. Was there a joke?
Well, there was the Marlins, or actually, MLB.com tweeted out a photo of just like a single guy on a ladder working on the fence.
Oh yeah, well, I didn't realize there was a joke there. Boy, we're getting. No,
that was serious. That the loser has to bring in the fences.
Okay. Anyway, I'm sorry.
I mean, I don't know. I think Ramos did a fine job, and I mean, if there were no Carter Capps there, I don't think there'd be any controversy.
Nope.
I think it's more about him than Ramos that there's a competition.
Yeah, I think Ramos Ramos was really good, like you said. I mean, I'm kind of disappointed in this news. I get it because Capps is the best reliever in the Marlins bullpen, but I just, when there's already a good one, I'd rather there not be controversy heading into the season and uncertainty when it comes to drafting. But Capps is in the conversation maybe for best reliever in baseball. He had a 110 FIP last year. The next closest for relievers was 173.
Whoa.
So, I mean, he didn't stay healthy for a full season, and he'll have to do that really before he can measure up to the Wade Davises and Dellin Betances and Craig Kimbrels and all of them. But you can at least see why they would be tempted to mess with Ramos in that role.
Yeah, 7 walks, 58 strikeouts, and 31 innings for Capps, and a 1.16 ERA. And he's the biggest cheater in baseball, as we know, because the way he pitches is completely illegal. But somehow he bribes somebody at Major League Baseball, and they allow him to do it. So as long as they keep calling it legal, we're gonna like Carter Capps quite a bit. Last note here: Dustin Pedroia says that he wants to steal more bases. He used to be like a 20 steal guy, not so much lately, but he says he's going to run more. Does that excite you guys? Talking about Dustin Pedroia.
I can't say that it does. I'm glad he wants to. I don't know if that translates into the result, and especially somebody of his age.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like we've heard this before, and it just hasn't materialized. Even though you'd think it would, because stolen bases, like, it's completely, I like to call it a decisions-based stat. I mean, it's not how capable a player is of it. It's just whether he decides to or not. So I don't know why it doesn't happen more often. But it's interesting with Pedroia. He got back to being a 20-homer guy last year. I know he hit only 12 home runs, but he also had less than 400 at-bats. He looked like a 20-homer guy again after a couple seasons where he was plagued by, I think, a wrist injury once, and then a torn thumb ligament the next year really brought down his home run total. So if he adds stolen bases back to the package too, I could see him being... I mean, as little elasticity as there is in the second base position heading into this season, where it's basically Altuve and Gordon and then everyone else, I could see Pedroia pushing for that number three spot. Doesn't need to be drafted nearly that high, but adding stolen bases back to the equation would probably put him there.
Yeah, but he is so likely to get hurt.
Yep.
Right?
He is.
So, yep. Something to consider. Okay, let's stay on the Red Sox here and talk about our sleepers. And this is an early list of sleepers, again, subject to change. But Al's one of the guys on his list was Blake Swihart. So we'll do one from Al, one from Scott, one from Al, one from Scott. And of course, you can read more, fantasynews.cbsports.com. A lot of really good content up, a lot of great video content. Check it out. All right, Blake Swihart batted .274 with 5 home runs in 84 games. He had only 18 walks, 77 strikeouts, but Swihart's going to be 24 years old in April when the season starts. So anyway, Al, give me your thoughts on Blake Swihart, sleeper catcher.
Well, speaking of subject to change, this one is definitely subject to change because he's nominally the number one catcher for the Red Sox right now, but Christian Vasquez is reportedly in the best shape of his life. That was tweeted out over the weekend. He's coming back from Tommy John surgery and progressing really well. And the Red Sox love his defense, and rightfully so. So this could change, but I'm rooting for Swihart because he had a tremendous second half, and only two catchers were better than him in terms of fantasy points per plate appearance and in terms of roto value, and those were Kyle Schwarber and Russell Martin. So he was even a little bit better than Posey McCann and Lucroy in the second half.
Yeah,
and there was a big change in his approach in the second half. Became an all-field hitter. So it's very speculative. It's just, you know, a little less than half a season, but I like the trend and where he's at on the age curve, and I don't think you're going to have to splurge to get him.
Wow, that's really interesting. I didn't realize that he was that good in the second half. All right, and we'll go to Scott's sleeper here. This one's interesting.
That sounded like such fake enthusiasm, Adam.
No, it's not at all. I'm serious.
Okay. All right.
That is interesting. What is it? What'd you say? Second or third best?
Third best in the second half.
That's crazy.
Okay. Yeah. No, I think you should be enthused.
Yeah, I am. Hooray. Great. Right. Go Red Sox. Scott, now you happy?
Wow. Okay.
You happy?
All right. You got taking it a little far now. The Yankees fan.
Gio Gonzalez is one of Scott's sleepers, which, you know, a little older
than.
Yeah,
how about that?
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. So
it is interesting.
Real enthusiasm here. Go for it.
So Gio Gonzalez, particularly if you look at his whip last year, was a pretty bad pitcher. Pretty bad. But the thing is, if you look at his underlying ratios, the walk rate, the strikeout rate, which was 8.7 per nine, the home run rate was one of the lowest he's ever had. Those are the three legs of the FIP triangle, the stats that are supposed to be the biggest determinants of ERA. And he was as good as ever. So what happened? He gave up a lot more hits, enough that he was the number one pitcher in terms of BABIP, allowing BABIP. Allowed the highest batting average on balls in play, which is a lot of bad luck. I mean, obviously, being the extreme ground ball pitcher who doesn't allow those home runs, the strength of his infield defense will have some impact on how many hits he allows as well. But this was a pretty extreme case. And, you know, the Nationals haven't remade their infield so much that there should have been that big leap in hit rate. So I think, I think luck was the main thing that went wrong for Gonzalez last year. And because he still has that ability to strike out a batter per inning, you know, he gets anywhere close to 200 innings, he's probably going to be up there among the strikeout leaders. And this is a player who I don't think you're going to see drafted even in the top 50 starting pitchers in most leagues. So he went in the span of 4 years with the Nationals from being maybe one of the most overrated pitchers in fantasy to now one of the most underrated. I see him in terms of skills being not too unlike Francisco Liriano.
Interesting. Okay, so this is 2 years in a row with a pretty bad, not bad, but not a great ERA. 357 in 2014 and 379 in 2015. And both times he had a really good FIP, 302 and 305. So it's 2 years in a row. Last year, a lot more ground balls for Gio Gonzalez. 1.19 ground ball to fly ball ratio, by far the highest in his career. Most ground balls in his career. I don't know, Al, how do you feel about Gio? Do you think he's a sleeper as well?
I do. That said, I mean, I don't know that I'll be going out of my way to target him, but I think he has fallen a lot in perception. And, you know, and I don't think he's really declined much. So, you know, by definition, I think it's going to make him a bargain.
Okay, Scott, let's stay on your list here and just compare. Who would you rather have, Gio Gonzalez or the next guy on your sleeper list, Raisel Iglesias, who really turned it on late in the season, had a 3.39 ERA and opponents hit 1.93 against Iglesias after the All-Star break. Who would you rather have, Gio or Iglesias?
I would rather have Iglesias. And part of that is the perception factor. I think there's going to be a lot more competition for Iglesias than Gonzalez. I have him ranked six spots ahead of Gonzalez, so it's close.
Okay.
But yeah, you mentioned how he turned it on with the ERA, and what was the other number you cited?
Oh, opponent's batting average, 193 after the All-Star break.
Right. And, you know, those aren't the most on-trend stats. I mean, a lot of people, you look at a small sample size and somebody puts up those numbers and you could be like, oh, okay, you know, small sample size, whatever. But what I like is what happened with his strikeout rate during that stretch. And I think this stat puts it in perspective. It's kind of one of those, well, let me just tell you the stat.
Okay.
Basically, only seven pitchers last year had, at any point during the season, three consecutive starts with double-digit strikeouts. And most of them were like Kershaw, Sale, Scherzer, Archer.
Oh, you know, can I guess one?
Elite group of pitchers.
Can I guess one?
Yeah, you can guess one.
Obviously Iglesias, but Rich Hill?
Yeah, Iglesias and Rich Hill. Yeah. We're both on my sleepers list. I don't know if you picked Hill here to talk about.
I did, yeah.
But that's a big reason for both of them. I know it's kind of a, you know, kind of an oddball stat. We're not normally citing how many consecutive starts a pitcher has double-digit strikeouts, but that shows a lot of, like, you have to have skills to be able to do that. That
yeah.
You could luck into maybe one of those starts, but not three in a row. So that tells me the kind of stuff he has, and with a really good walk rate, too. It's not like he has the control issues that even a Gio Gonzalez has. So I think what we saw last year was him getting acclimated to the big leagues for the first few months, acclimating to starting, because that wasn't something he did much of in Cuba. And then once he got his feet under him, his arsenal was able to take care of the rest. And I see him, you know, taking a big step forward this year.
I did have a pretty substantial fantasy baseball crush on Raisel Iglesias when I first saw him pitch. Do you guys remember that one?
Because
Chris was always like, that's my guy. And I was like, dude, he's been my guy since the first week of the season. And of course, he did nothing all year. But he's got some serious skills, and he's fun to watch.
Yeah.
So, all right, big Iglesias fan. Nobody remembers. That's cool. I'm pretty sure I remember
liked him. I remember the enthusiasm right away.
Thank you. All right, back to Al's sleepers. Devin Travis, remember him? He was doing really well at the start of the season. Then he got hurt, but he batted .325 with 6 home runs in April. After coming off the DL late in June, he batted .357, but the power kind of disappeared. So, Al, what do you expect from Devin Travis? At least the home runs disappeared. What do you expect from Devin Travis this year?
Well, I do expect that there's going to be more power. This one's a little tricky, counting on Travis. I'm more confident in the bargain aspect of this, that I think he's going to be overlooked and forgotten and drop to really late in drafts. I'm less than totally confident he's going to pay off because, he's coming off a shoulder surgery. It was a shoulder injury that plagued him for almost the whole season after that initial, burst in April. So it's really his value, I think, is very dependent on how healthy he is coming off of this surgery. So I think he's going to be cheap no matter what. And I think there's a pretty good chance he's going to produce a huge return on whatever you have to give up to draft him or get him in an auction for, because we saw the potential last April.
Okay, would you guys rather have Devin Travis or DJ LeMahieu as your second baseman?
Give me Travis.
Give me Travis as well. We're going to have to
fight for him.
Yeah. rock, paper, scissors.
In a roto league, Travis or Colton Wong?
Travis easily for me.
That's
going to be tough for Scott.
Yeah, no, I'm going to take Wong.
Okay.
Although, I mean, he has some playing time concerns, too, with Jerko coming aboard. I'm not as enthusiastic as I was a month ago when it comes to Wong.
Okay. And I should point out for Travis that, I mean, he's going to miss probably a month or maybe even more. So, I mean, it's not just the risk of how he returns, but when he returns.
Okay, fair enough. We'll stay on Al's list here. And at that position, still on second base, we got, SpongeBob. What was the SpongeBob name?
Spangenberg SquarePants.
Spangenberg SquarePants. So funny. One of the best team names ever. Anyway, Corey Spangenberg wasn't even on my radar, Al, but over his last 63 games, Spangenberg hits .301 with a .366 on base, .440 slugging percentage. Okay, kind of a sleeper for you, like a deeper NL-only sleeper or what?
I'd say deeper mixed league. I think he's better than just an NL-only guy. He's somebody that I would be definitely targeting in, say, a 14 or 15-team mixed league. Probably won't be drafting him, maybe 12-team roto in the very, very late rounds. But if even in the leagues where I don't draft him, I'm going to be watching him really closely because I'm pretty stoked to see how he does in 2016. You mentioned the batting average late, the last 63 games batting over .300. I think there's a good chance he'll be batting first or maybe second in the Padres lineup. So that's going to certainly help him in points formats. And by doing a search, and I don't remember why I did the search. I think it was doing research on some other player, but I did a search on opposite field hitters, and he came up really high in the leaderboard for WOBA and for ISO when he hit to the opposite field. And the thing is, the other hitters that were at the top of that leaderboard were all really good hitters. And if you went to the bottom of that leaderboard, they were really bad hitters. So how much power and just hitting skill a batter has to the opposite field seems to be a pretty good indicator. And he was just so you know, reputation wise, so out of line with everybody else on that leaderboard. And then looking back, you know, who in the recent past kind of fell into that same pattern? How about Adam Eaton a year ago?
Yeah.
Who was a surprise power breakout last year.
Nice.
And there's a lot of similarities really between the two of them. Cool. So, I think Spangerberg could be this year's Eaton, but in the middle infield.
All right, let's talk about Mr. Plate Discipline, Scott White, putting a guy who had 6 walks and 44 strikeouts on his sleeper list. Byron Buxton, draft bust for the Minnesota Twins so far.
Oh, come on.
I'm just kidding.
Give the guy a break.
The lead prospect got a little cup of coffee last year, and only 22 years old, but Byron Buxton is a sleeper for you. Okay, where are you drafting Byron Buxton on draft day?
Well, the only mock we've done in-house was a head-to-head points league, so 21 rounds, only 3 outfielders. He went in that very last round, and that's the biggest reason why I call him a sleeper, because he was such a letdown last year, especially compared to, you know, most every other high-end prospect who got called up. You know, when everyone else is hitting and he doesn't, you know, he's going to look bad by comparison. But it's not like it's abnormal for prospects as a whole to struggle when they first come up. I mean, Mike Trout's first partial season in the majors, he hit right around 200. And, you know, obviously that's turned out pretty well. And Buxton was a guy who, when he was first starting out in the minors, when he first started putting up big time numbers, people were comparing to Mike Trout. I think maybe a more realistic comparison in terms of ultimate peak is probably Andrew McCutchen, but either way, you're talking about first round potential here. I think part of what happened to him last year was, like I said, that he when he first started, just blew up in the minors, his first full season down there. You know, he was still an A ball. And in the 2 years since then, it's just been a ton of injuries, one after another, concussions and sprained wrists. And I think he had a hamstring in there. I can't even keep track of all the injuries. It was just so many that he really hasn't gotten a ton of at bats since A ball. So, but beyond the fact that he was 21 when he got called up last year, he was an inexperienced 21, and I think you really can't expect someone to hold his own in the majors with all those obstacles to overcome.
Is he going to have the job out of spring training, or does he have to earn it?
He has to earn it, but he enters on with the inside track for sure.
Okay,
a guy to keep an eye on there is Max Kepler, who's kind of the polar opposite in Buxton, that he doesn't have the you know, extreme upside, but he's much more polished and a much safer bet to make an immediate contribution. But you're talking a mixed league player. You want the guy who's going to be the impact player, and I think Buxton has a better chance of that. And like I said, he's the more likely to win the job anyway.
All right, so Buxton is on your sleepers list. Another outfielder, Aaron Altherr, who's 25 years old, and he had 5 home runs with 6 steals and 8 attempts in 39 games for the Phillies last year, and was much better against righties. I mean, he was pretty bad against lefties, batted 180 and 50 at-bats, but against righties, .563 slugging percentage with 5 home runs and 87 at-bats. Pretty darn good for Aaron Altherr, who also can steal some bases. I mean, can you even compare him to Buxton, or is he a much later consideration?
Well, I mean, and if you're talking about evaluating players for the long term, I don't think it's fair to compare him to Buxton. But if you're talking about just this year, based on the way their first showings in the majors went, I don't think Altherr is too far behind. He's another power speed guy who, yeah, he struggled against left-handers, but right-handers are what he's going to face most often. And combining all his numbers, lefties and righties, for that stretch he played last year, he averaged more head-to-head points per game than Chris Bryant. Was right there in between Charlie Blackmon and Chris Bryant. And that was with a .241 batting average overall. So that shows you the impact of that power-speed combo, what it can do for him. Yeah. He's not a particularly safe prospect, was kind of a late bloomer in the minors. Most of the prospect guy, you know, the prospect reports, Baseball America and whatnot, had kind of given up on him because he was so slow to develop. But they always liked the tools, and at AAA last year, he finally was able to put it together, and it carried over to the majors. And just the fact that the Phillies are obviously rebuilding, there's nobody to stand in his way. I think he's going to get every chance to succeed. And, you know, if he picks up where he left off last year, he's going to be mixed league relevant.
And how did Altair end up with more fantasy points per game than Chris Bryant? Because in 39 games, he had 11 doubles and 4 triples.
Yeah. So
that's going to show up more obviously in the points scoring than the category scoring or the roto scoring. But, pretty good stuff. There's a lot of power there in 39 games. All right, Al, so far, Gio Gonzalez, Raisel Iglesias, Byron Buxton, Aaron Altair. Those are 4 sleepers I've read for Scott. Do you have any beef with any of these guys?
I'd say the one actually probably the most beef with is Altair. And I was intrigued by those late season numbers too, because he didn't really register for me as being much of a prospect. But then, I saw a really interesting piece, on FanGraphs within the last week or two. And unfortunately, I don't remember who the author was, but, he studied hitters who, hit down the alleys at a very high rate last season. And Altair was one of them. And part of his research showed that that's not something that typically transfers from year to year. So I think that Altair just, you know, he might have been hitting the ball down the alleys and getting a little more power that way. And that's not necessarily something that's going to carry over to this year. And given that he wasn't really that much of a power hitter in the minors, I think he's a good regression candidate. And then the Phillies have, you know, Nick Williams, who'll probably be major league ready at some point this season. I could see Altair being a guy who, if he doesn't get off to a good start, could wind up going into fantasy oblivion.
You see, Scott, I told you about the alleys.
The alleys. I mean, that last sentence, I agree with it completely. It's now or never for Altair, but he's going to get the first crack at the job. So the fact he slugged .487 in the minors last year, I wouldn't want to overlook this guy if, you know, I'm deciding between him and somebody completely boring like Andre Ethier or something for my fifth outfield spot. You know, I'd rather go with the guy less assured of playing, but potentially more helpful, more useful in more ways.
If you were drafting today, would you draft Byron Buxton or Rusne Castillo?
Buxton.
Yeah.
Not even close.
Really? We're just giving up on Castillo?
No, not giving up on him.
But I don't see the upside as being in the same neighborhood as Buxton's.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, Scott, I've read Swihart, Devin Travis, and Spangenberg for Al. Any beef with those three?
What were they again? Swihart, Travis, and Spangenberg?
Yeah. You don't have to. There's 3 more.
I mean, I can't really get excited about drafting Spangenberg because I just don't see him as having enough upside to factor outside of NL-only leagues. And maybe, I mean, are you thinking of him as a mixed league guy, Al? Or
deeper mixed league. Deeper, not like my voice just now.
Like, I think a good season for Spangenberg would be what DJ LeMahieu did last year, which was useful in mixed leagues, but, you know, he's not going to be the pick that makes your season, you know? So it's kind of nitpicking, but that would be the one I'm least excited about.
That's just what I'm counting on in my drafts this year.
Yeah.
Okay, here's another one from Al. Matt Kemp, who finished as the number 22 outfielder in points, number 17 in roto. Kemp hit 23 home runs. He drove in 100, and he stole 12 bases in 14 attempts. And he was a lot better at home than he was on the road. I think Justin Upton had those splits too, so it's not a Petco problem. Alright, for the second straight year, he finished strong and hit well after the All-Star break, Al. So why is Matt Kemp, that 31 years old, a sleeper for you?
This is almost completely a perception thing for me with Kemp. And I'm glad you included that mention of the second half in 2014, because if you do go back and you basically are looking at a season and a half back, he finished really strong in 2014. And he had one really, really just putrid awful month in 2015. That was May. That really brought down all of his numbers. the rest of his months, the rest of the season was really good. So I, you know, I, not that I expect him to necessarily be a lot better than those rankings that you, threw out there, 22nd, 17th. I see him as a top 20 outfielder, but I think that he does have the reputation for being on the wrong side of the age curve, of being way too inconsistent, being in the Padres lineup, which is something I'm not going to give a whole lot of weight to, and they're going to undervalue him.
Well, do you think he still has upside? Can Matt Kemp have a surprising, I'm not going to say MVP, but let's say all-star. Could he have an all-star caliber year and be a top 10 outfielder? Do you still see that upside from Kemp?
I think it's possible, but that's not why I'm drafting him. That's not what I'm expecting when I draft him. I think if he can just give us what he gave us last year, that's fine. I have a hunch that because of the factors that I mentioned, that people on draft day might not even expect that much from him.
Okay, Matt Kemp or Cespedes?
I'm almost positive I got Kemp ranked higher. Gut says
Scott?
Kemp anyway.
Cespedes.
All right, let's go.
I'm gonna be one of the people who are fooled by Kemp, I guess.
Alright, one more guy or two more for Al, but we'll go this next one here is Jock Peterson.
Jock Peterson.
By the way, I got Kemp 15th among outfielders in our rankings. Scott's got him 28th, so if Scott is representative of our fellow drafters,
gotta represent.
That's what I'm talking about.
Let's take a look at who Scott has ahead of Matt Kemp, and maybe I can manufacture an argument here, which could be fun. Let's see.
I just took a swig of the last of my cola here that I'm drinking.
Cola? What kind of cola are you drinking?
Well, I didn't want to say because it had gotten kind of room temperature, you know, and it was good when it was cold, but this last sip kind of tasted like cough syrup. That was a lot of sugar I just took down that I didn't enjoy.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's a letdown.
Well, Jacoby Ellsbury over Matt Kemp, what are you, nuts? Especially in a points league.
Nutso. You know, it's interesting. I actually have Ellsbury on my bust list. So maybe I need to change those two at least.
Well, you look at Ellsbury before he got hurt last year, and he was hitting like 320 something before he got hurt. So, all right. Anyway, Jock Peterson.
Three something for a season, or even 290 for a season.
Well, Jock Peterson, I don't know if I have to retire the voice. It might have run its course.
No.
It's pretty much the main reason why he's on my sleep.
All right, well, Jock Peterson, that movie was on, Ferris Bueller's Day Off was on the other day, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. He'll be 24 years old in April, and he just got so bad by the end of the year. He hit 222, 169, 120, and 197 in the last 4 months of the season. But let's not give up on him yet, Al Melchior.
That's what I say. It's not that I thought that he was any kind of decent, much less good in the second half last year. He was terrible. But the fact that for 3 months that he was really, really, you know, very valuable, getting on base and hitting with consistent power, I just find it hard to believe that pitchers are going to completely figure him out and he's just going to be a flash in the pan. And I'm certainly willing to risk whatever it takes to draft him, or, you know, what it will take. I should say not whatever it takes, but what it would likely take to draft Peterson.
It's looking like it's going to be less than it was last year when he was completely unproven, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I totally get that. Just, you know, why not? As good as he looked. I mean, we stress how bad he looked in the second half. That's in contrast to how good he looked in the first half. He was hitting the ball harder than anybody but Giancarlo Stanton. And the walks, even in the second half, I don't think the walks disappointed.
No, that was the one
thing
he did.
He was a great on base guy relative to the batting average.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the batting average was so bad. It was 298 in April, and then it was 236. It got worse pretty much every month until...
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like he was hitting for a high average. He was walking
a lot. But the thing is, with all those walks, like if he's just a 240 hitter for a full season, he's still going to be a big fantasy asset with the kind of power he has. If he ever runs like he did in the minors.
Right. That was weird. He stole four bases in 11 attempts, and he had a reputation of being a steals guy, right?
He did. It wasn't a great steals rate, and maybe that's why the Dodgers didn't ask him to run so much. and maybe they never will. But, you know, I think even in that case, and it's kind of an odd comparison because he's so much more athletic than Adam Dunn, but I think Peterson could have a career much like Adam Dunn, who I guess toward the end of his career was kind of a fantasy punchline, but for most of his career, he was a stud, you know, 240 hitting, but near 400 on base percentage, 40 homer mashing stud. So that wouldn't be a bad end for Peterson.
Peterson or Buxton?
Peterson.
Yeah, Peterson.
All right, now listen, I can tell you one thing. The current manager of the Dodgers, obviously Dave Roberts, he stole more bases than Don Mattingly.
Okay.
At least that's my guess.
That's so he's going to ask Peterson to run more?
I just wanted to bring it full circle with the manager thing, but...
Be like me.
I mean, Peter...
Steal some bases.
Dave Roberts had, I'm guessing, one of the five most important stolen bases ever.
Yeah.
Right?
Maybe, yeah, oh, one yeah. Most memorable for
great.
Sure.
Great. No, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that for the rest of the show. That'd be awesome.
yeah. how the Yankees became the first and only team to blow a 3-0 lead in a series.
In baseball, but not in hockey. It's been done in hockey.
Of course.
So take hockey. That.
Like hockey matters. Come on.
oh, boy. You know how many Toronto fans we have that listen to the show?
Not as many now.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's go back to Scott's list. Rich Hill. Here's a stat about Rich Hill. I think only 7 pitchers had 3 straight games with double-digit strikeouts last year, and Rich Hill was one of them. Did you know that, Scott?
I did know that.
Yeah.
I think we just talked about it.
I know.
About,
I
15 minutes ago?
Right.
20,
yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah, it's a very good stat. He had a 1.55 ERA. He only pitched 19 innings, but he struck out 36 batters. Holy crap.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing. He did it. He did it 3 starts in a row. He made 4 starts total. So, I mean, that's a teeny tiny sample size, right? And we all hate small sample sizes, but the organization who led the movement that caused us to hate small sample sizes is the one that signed him. So, it was such a dominant performance that they were willing to overlook the small sample size and give this guy a chance. And look, it's the kind of thing they have to do, finding those diamonds in the rough. I mean, the lack of a sample size is kind of a market inefficiency where if Hill's, obviously he's not going to be this good, but if he's just good in a general sense, they got him for a bargain and they have to take that chance, you know, with the situation there and financially. But, it wasn't completely out of left field for Rich Hill. It was a long freaking time ago, but in 2007, he was a, you know, started in every league type of pitcher in fantasy. The raw numbers, I'm not going to cite them because it was a very different game in 2007. They don't seem so great by today's standards, but he was about a strikeout per inning pitcher, had this wicked curveball that nobody could hit. And then he just fell apart from there. He stopped throwing strikes. He eventually had Tommy John surgery and he struggled to regain his footing. Even though the minor league numbers the last couple of years were pretty good. So I see him, I see this potentially paying off in a big way for both the Athletics and for the fantasy owners who also take advantage of the market inefficiency of, well, it wasn't really enough of a sample to mean anything. For a late round pick, I'll wager that it was.
Would you rather have Rich Hill or Jake Odorizzi?
Odorizzi, but I do think Hill probably has more upside.
Al?
Yeah, it's tough. I'm not that enthused about Odorizzi. I think I'll take the flyer on Hill. Now, I did a Twitter poll, I want to say about 3 weeks ago, and it started from a discussion we had here in the office, as all Twitter polls do, Porcello versus Rich Hill. And the people said Porcello.
I think yeah, did like we talk 60, about this before?
60-40.
When did
yeah,
you do that?
So. Yeah,
I think we did talk about it on here.
Yeah, I just,
but some people might not have listened to that episode.
I have no interest in Rick Porcello. I probably said that on that episode, too.
That's why you didn't include him on the list of sleepers for me, even though he's on my list.
Oh, really? And Heath has him as a regression candidate, like regressing up.
Yep. You'll hear plenty from me about Porcello for the next many, many weeks.
Okay, well.
Plenty of chances to Porcello it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very nice.
How about another
Not really.
How about another pitcher? Matt Moore is the last Melchior sleeper we're going to talk about today. All right. So, Matt Moore, big year for him?
I think so. And I think that it's a combination of really high upside, upside that we've never really seen realized for Moore. And maybe, some under the radar perception too with him, because, I mean, those who, you know, were still paying attention in September, I'm sure are aware of Moore's story last year that, came back from Tommy John surgery, was awful, got sent to the minors, wound up being very dominant down there in AAA, then got called back up in September and continued to be dominant for the Rays. And in six starts after the September call up, I'm waiting for the, game log aggregator here to load. It's very slow. But yeah, put up really good stats in those six starts.
Okay. Well, you let us know when you get, those. Okay. I got last four starts.
I'm sorry.
Last four starts, Matt Moore had a 1.35 ERA. That's pretty good.
Yeah. In fact, you're kind of cherry picking out the two lesser ones. But even with those, a 2.97 ERA, and 67% strikes thrown, which is huge for Moore, because even in his better years, with the Rays, he really had some control issues.
Okay. And the final sleeper for Scott White, a guy that got me last year. He tricked me last year. I took him late, but
don't
CJ Cron.
Again.
Yeah, I hope
Listen
not.
To me.
CJ Cron, 26 years old. He did not have a very good start to the season, but was very good.
Even better finish.
Well, much better. No, he had a bad start to the season. He had a good finish though. July 4th and on, he batted 292 with 14 home runs, 847 OPS. Mm-hmm. What do you think, CJ Cron?
Well, I think his biggest problem has always been the fact that Mike Socha doesn't want to give him a chance as an everyday player. I don't know if you've seen the Angels' projected lineup for 2016, though, Adam.
No, but I knew who their manager was.
It's still Mike Socha.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, unlike the Dodgers, the same guy. But it's really bad. Really bad. Like, I think Roster Resource projects Todd Cunningham to start in left field bad. And obviously Albert Pujols is out for at least a month probably because of foot surgery. Socha's really going to have no choice but to play Cron. And that was true for most of the second half when he did all that damage. I think what makes Cron interesting is he has the 30 homer power. He's shown nothing less than that in either the majors or the minors. But he strikes out like a table setter, like a Martin Prado kind of rate. And so that leads me to believe that, you know, he's not going to be this all or nothing Mark Trumbo type. He could hit for respectable batting average too. Now, the walks aren't going to measure up to like the best first base has to offer. But I think the complete package could make him, you know, trading off some walks for batting average, it could make him like a Lucas Duda type contributor who's still somebody who's going to be started in the majority of mixed leagues, provided he gets those everyday bats. But again, like, who else are they going to play?
CJ Cron is the answer. Okay, that's an early look at our sleepers. I think we'll do some busts for Thursday. And they gave me a list of like 15 each, so there are a lot more, and you can read about them on the website, but I think I clearly picked the best six for both of you.
And you didn't pick Porcello for Al.
Yeah, even despite that, though, I think you did a great job.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Now it's time for emails and keepers. And here's one from Omar in Buffalo. He says, Dear Dodd, Bear, and Rye. I don't know them.
The only Dodd I know is from Memento.
Wait, you don't know Dennis Dodd? He's like one of the longest tenured CBS sports writers, our college football writer.
Oh, yes, him too.
This feels college football. Oh, it's Fargo. It's Fargo. See? I knew it. Okay, he says, Omar says, I want to get my keeper question in early this year before Adam starts complaining about the number of keeper questions he's getting.
Too late.
You're too late. Anyway, I'll read your stupid question. 12-team, 8x8 categories league. Roto-style roster, but only one catcher. I can keep four players for up to 3 years. So he is considering the following players, and he can keep four of them. Chris Davis, Miguel Sano, Todd Frazier, Albert Pujols, Alex Gordon, Jake Arrieta, Zach Greinke, and Corey Kluber. And Frazier and Kluber can only be kept for 2 years. The others, Chris Davis, Sano, Pujols, Alex Gordon, Arrieta, and Greinke, can be kept for 3 years. So pick four for our good friend Omar.
Is this D or Alex? I'm assuming it's probably D, Gordon.
Ooh, yeah, it's a good call. I said Alex, but I don't know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this is tough. I know I'm keeping Sano. And, boy, oh boy. I'll go Chris Davis, Sano. And now I'm trying to decide both Arrieta and Kluber or one plus possibly D Gordon. And, sorry, whichever Gordon you are, I'm going with both Arrieta and Kluber.
Okay.
You know, I'd probably throw, assuming it's D. Gordon, I think I'd rather keep him than Chris Davis. Particularly, well, I mean, I guess you don't have to keep him for 3 years, but I don't know. I just feel like Chris Davis, the way his last three seasons have gone, there's so much volatility there that, like, if he just crashed and burned next year and was never a fantasy factor again, it wouldn't surprise me. I'm not predicting it. I just think Gordon's safer and a lot, a bigger advantage, I feel like, in a roto league, a categories league. It's stolen bases is going to be a tough category to fill this year.
Also, email us if I haven't mentioned the address, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, and put baseball podcast in the subject line. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Brandon in Connecticut, is Javi Baez worth drafting in a standard mixed league this year?
I would say in Roto, very late, as a flyer. I really hope he gets traded because I know he's been playing some center field this winter, but I still just don't see where the room is for him to be the Joe Maddon super utility guy. Everybody's so good that he would potentially fill in for. But I think one way or another, he finds playing time. And it was really encouraging to see the progress that he made last season.
Next email is from Ezra. He says, Dear Carlos, Jacoby, and Brett. We know them. Ezra did a 12-team mock draft, and he wants to know what we think of his team. So it appears
you can do better than this, Ezra.
Do better than Ezra?
Yeah, if you're listening, emailers, do better than Ezra.
Very good. Now name one better than Ezra song.
What's that? Name one song.
One better than Ezra song.
Good.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Okay, his catcher is Lucroy. His infield is Lucroy, Teixeira, Cano, Carpenter, Jahani Peralta, Phillips, and Santana. So Carlos Santana is his corner infielder. Johnny Peralta is shortstop. Okay. Outfield is Stanton, Betts, Ellsbury, Fowler, and utility is Yadier Molina.
Oh.
Yeah. Sale, Sonny Gray, Darvish, Wainwright, Shelby Miller, James Shields, and Tehran are his pitchers. Sale, Gray, Darvish, Wainwright, Shelby Miller, Shields, and Tehran. That's not such a bad team.
No, the pitching's very good.
The outfield is awesome. Stanton and Betts and Ellsbury.
When it comes to the infield, though, a word comes to mind. Geriatric is the word that comes to mind for me.
Yeah, a little old.
A lot of bust potential there.
Yeah, some couple of fringy guys there.
Yeah.
Better than Ezra. Okay, Ryan
and
Boise.
He's got Javier Baez on the bench, just like we talked about.
There you go.
Very nice. Ryan and Boise. My league calls itself a keeper league, but everyone only gets to keep one player. Previous year's waiver claims are kept in the sixth round. Drafted players can be kept four rounds earlier than the previous year's draft position. That said, do you like Betts in the 14th or Rizzo in the 4th? in a three outfielder league. Betts in the 14th, or Rizzo in the 4th.
Betts in the 14th. That's, I mean, Rizzo in the 4th is obviously good value too, but Betts in the 14th is, that's the kind of value you live for.
I don't think I'm anywhere near as high on Betts as Scott is, but yeah, that value is something I cannot walk away from.
Two more emails. Joe from Chicago. Arrieta in the 6th round or Lester in the 12th round?
That's a little tougher, actually. But
that's a lot tougher. I'll go Lester.
If it's just for this year, Lester, but if this is something that's going to carry over for several years, I'll say Arrieta.
Last email is from Joe from Rockville Center, New York. He says, what's up, Andy, Bobby, and Barry?
That's early 90s Pirates outfield.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is.
So he is in a keeper league, of course. 5x5 head-to-head dynasty, and he has an embarrassment of riches, and he can only keep 6 players. So here are the 6 that he is leaning towards right now. Miguel Cabrera, Chris Bryant, Carlos Correa, Jose Altuve, Mookie Betts, and Matt Harvey. That means I'm throwing Arrieta, Frazier, Schwarber, and Wainwright back in the pool. Am I making a bad choice here?
I think this is where our difference on Betts is going to come out, because I think I would want Arrieta or Schwarber over him. And I think I'm going to go Arrieta here.
I mean, I'd take Arrieta over Harvey.
Oh, that's true. I would definitely do
that.
So is it,
look, I mean, Mickey, I know we both have him going as a first rounder this year, but how many more years does he have of that? I don't see how you could go wrong keeping a 6 of Arrieta, Bryant, Correa, Altuve, Betts, Harvey. And they may be your 6 for the next 10 years. 10 is probably an exaggeration, but the next 5. I kind of like that idea myself.
And the PS from Joe says, PS, Adam, are those two broads who are groping your picture in your Twitter avatar single? Because damn! So if you see my Twitter avatar, it's pretty epic. And I don't know who they are. And that is not a real picture. That was Photoshopped. You can do it yourself. I think you can probably Photoshop your own face on that same billboard and have those same two beautiful women groping your face. So make it happen, everybody. And that reminds me, follow us on Twitter. I'm at Adam Azer, at CBS Scott White, and that's AIZER, at CBS Scott White, at Al Melk, CBS, Al MELC, CBS. And that's going to do it for us. Guys, busts on Thursday. Hooray! Thank you for joining me, fellas.
Damn.
Damn is right. Okay, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you in a couple of days.